is Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I don't know why Floyd just walked out of the studio.
I'm not sure.
Oh, man. So Floyd just walked out of the studio, so I don't know where he went. So we'll get to Floyd when Floyd gets in here. But, boy, what a wild night of sports last night. The draft lottery, this is the craziest thing about the draft lottery. I do not care. Do not care who gets the number one pick and where's Zion and all of this. I literally don't care. And yet I am ashamed to admit that I watched and listened to all the commentary about the draft lottery and so on and so forth. By the way, Memphis got the number two pick. Not that I care about Memphis either, but just they got the number two pick, so there's that. But what I do care about the most, well, there's two things I really care about. First of all, GM, how are you today?
Outstanding.
Where'd you go?
I had to run to the little boys' room.
You had like an hour beforehand.
I know. I didn't realize until I stood up. It was time to go.
So we got that. Then, you know, we just get into that. But I care about, you know, with the Titans, many different things. But one thing that really stands out to me is I truly, truly, truly believe in Derrick Henry. Floyd can call me a flip-flopper all he wants. But every day that I think about why the Titans will be 12-4 this upcoming season, which they will be, I think a lot of it will be because of Derrick Henry. And I think that the last four games proved everything that I had screamed about on the table and pounded for Derrick's sake was right, at least for four games. And there are a lot of people who agree with me, and there are a lot of people who are like, hey, I've got to see it for more than four games to believe that Derrick Henry can be the man. And I think you sit in that category, Floyd, but at least you think Derrick Henry can be the man if he's consistent like he was at the end of last season, which is a humongous, monumental if, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no way he can continue, you know, with what he did the last four games. I mean, that's, you know, he gained
like
3,000
yards.
He gained 3,000 yards. Yeah, that ain't going to happen. You know, but he's got to get to a point that he can carry, you know, the load of the running, which means he's got to go out there and carry the ball, you know, 25 times and gain 90 yards every week.
But on paper, you think he's earned the opportunity to prove that he can go out there and be, quote unquote, the man. You know, like Ezekiel Elliott is the man and Gurley is the man. And those guys like Kamara.
But you know they're the men.
Well, and I use Kamara as an example here. Kamara, you know, was a third-round pick, and he played behind Ingram, and Ingram did a lot of the running, and he did a lot of the catching, and then he did a little bit more of the running, and Ingram did a little bit of less playing, and then now Ingram's gone, and Kamara is the man. Now, we don't know if Kamara can be the man, but we think Kamara can probably be.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we feel comfortable he can be the man.
Yeah, we feel comfortable about him.
And that's kind of where I sit with Derrick. Well, Lewis Riddick from ESPN was on the midday show yesterday, and Lewis does not feel like Derrick Henry can be the man. This is what he said.
Derrick needs to have a complimentary back to go with him. I don't think he's the guy who you necessarily are going to build an offense around. He's not a pillar type of running back. He's not an Ezekiel Elliott. He's not a Saquon Barkley type. So you need a Deion Lewis type that kind of complements him. Can you get away with that? Yeah, you can, but you need to be highly efficient in the other areas on the offense as far as being able to, you know, have good offensive line play, which you could say as far as the Titans are concerned, we'll see how they operate, especially from guard to guard this year, which was a weakness for them, thus the drafting of Nate Davis and the signing of Roger Saffold. So you need that area of it to continue to be productive in order for the running back position to be productive, because they don't have a bell cow player, right? And that's okay.
Is it? I mean, to me, I feel like Derrick is – we're talking about Marcus having a prove-it year. I mean, Marcus is proving whether or not he should be the starting quarterback of the Tennessee Titans. I think Derrick is in a prove-it year, too, where it's almost like Derrick has to prove that he can be the guy. And the idea of Lewis Riddick saying, hey, he's good, but he can't be a bell cow, I totally disagree. I think everything about Derrick tells you he can be a bell cow running back. What do you think when you hear Lewis Riddick, a very respected football guy, say that about Derrick Henry?
Well, when you look at his high school and college career, you would say he can be the bell cow, but he hasn't done that in the NFL. And that's where people back up. You know, people go, hey, you know, anybody can do it in college. But what about in this league? And we haven't seen it in this league. And the first 12 games of this year didn't help him.
But he never got a true opportunity until the end to do that.
You know what? There's going to be excuses like that across the board. If you go out and the first 10 times I give you the ball, you gain 70 yards, guess what? You're going to get the ball more. First 10 times I give you the ball, you gain 7 yards, guess what? You're not going to get very much. I mean, that's the way it works. And you can find all kinds of reasons and all those reasons may be a factor. But the truth is, if it's not working, you just can't keep putting it there. You know, you've got to go someplace else with it. And I think we saw him when he went in, like the Washington game. I mean, he went in there and he didn't bust any real long ones. But, I mean, he had a ton of 6, 7, 8, 9, 6, 7, 8, and they just kept giving them the ball. You know?
And then they took him out of the game, and then Washington tied the game, and then they put him back in, and then they won the game.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think they've proven if he's the guy and he goes out there, he starts lighting it up, he'll get the opportunity.
So I think the excuses are valid for Derrick Henry on why you can say he hasn't had his opportunity to prove that he can be a bell cow. I mean, playing behind DeMarco Murray, I don't think any of us have any resentment for the fact that they played DeMarco over Derrick at those certain points in their career. I mean, DeMarco probably, when all is said and done about the resurrection of the Titans from the worst team in the league to whatever they become, there should be a chapter in that book on DeMarco Murray for how important he was to all of us.
Oh, yeah.
And so I don't think any of us can take anything away from DeMarco in that regard. And then you add up the fact that last year's offensive coordinator sucked. And I blame LaFleur for a lot of this. I think he wanted to throw it. He was stubborn about wanting to throw it. And so they were going to, you know, kind of use every reason to not give it to Derek. And then finally, Derek produced so much that the coaches couldn't hold him back anymore. And it was time for him to go out there and dominate. And by the time they got to that point, it was too late. And So I validate the excuses. To me, there's a difference in excuse from Derrick Henry saying, I've never gotten the opportunity to prove I can be the bell cow guy, than there is for Tajae Sharpe to come up to me and say, I've never gotten the opportunity to prove I can be a number one receiver. Like, I can look at Tajae Sharpe and I can say, you are not a number one wide receiver. Derrick, to me, I believe Derrick is a true bell cow running back, and I believe that he will get the opportunity to prove himself that he is that or is not that this year. And I think everybody in Titanland is going to be pleasantly surprised. I guess my take on what Lewis Riddick said about Derrick Henry is that he's wrong. I think he's wrong about Derrick Henry. I believe Derrick can be the bell cow running back, and I believe this time next year Deion Lewis won't even be on the team because he makes too much money and they just won't need. Now, they'll need a second guy who can come in on third down and 16, but they won't need a guy at $5 million who fumbles the ball to come in on third down and 16. So I don't even think Deion will be here this time next year because I think Derrick is the true number one, and they just need a little pass-catching back you can get in the sixth round, and that'll be the second guy like Rodney Thomas, and that'll be what they have, and that'll be the Titans going forward. And so my take on Lewis Riddick's take of Derrick Henry, when he says Derrick cannot be a bell cow running back, I just think is a wrong opinion.
Okay.
Do you think it's a wrong opinion?
No. I mean, I think he's very right on with what he's saying.
So you don't think Derrick can be a bell cow running?
No, I'm saying we don't know.
But that's not what Lewis said.
Well, that's what I think he said. I mean, I think he's saying, I don't think he's going to be the guy by himself. He's going to need somebody else to, who would he say? Somebody else to come in and help him along or whatever the case may be.
He said can't be a bell cow running back.
Well, I mean, I don't think I could say can't be. I mean, but I think right now we're just up in the air.
Like, I'm okay with people being undecided on Derrick.
Well, the hard part about it, though, if you're a coach and if you're undecided about a kid, every time you give him the ball and nothing good happens, it drops him down another notch. Well, now you're not as excited about giving him the ball. Why? Because you know what's going to happen. He's going to, gain 1 yard. And that's not – so that doesn't help him when you're not sure. Now, the other side of that is true, too. If I give it to him, he gains 7, I'm going to give it to him again. See if he gains 7 again. See if he gains 7 again. But If the opposite of that, like so many of those games last year started the same with Derek. He would go out there, it would be gain of two, you know, minus one, gain of three, punt. Well, I mean, you just can't continue to give the ball to a running back that is not gaining, you know, enough yardage to keep you ahead of the chains. And I think that was the problem early with him, right? Whether it was his fault or Marcus's fault or the offensive line's fault or, you know, whoever it was. But if you're questioning whether or not he's the guy and you go into a game and the first six times you give him, you come away with 12 yards, you're not going to be excited about giving him the ball now. You're not going to be excited about that. Now, if you give it to him one time and he gains 12 yards, heck, give it to him again. Let's see it again.
I just look at his yards per attempt. After the Charger game, the yards per attempt for Derrick Henry, he got six carries and he averaged 4.5 yards a pop in the win at Dallas. So you can't tell me he's averaging 4.5 a pop and they only give it to him six times. Like, how is he supposed to go?
That's not what's important. You're missing out on what's important. If it goes 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, 12, that doesn't do you any good.
That wasn't what happened in that game.
It doesn't. It has to be. If it's 4.5, it has to be 1st and 10, 2nd and 5, 1st and 10. 1st and 10, 2nd and 5, 3rd and 1. 1st and 10, 2nd and 5, and that's not what. Now, I don't remember that game specifically, but I remember early in the year that was not happening for him for whatever reason. And there were too many 2nd and 11s or 2nd and 9s where you can't give him the ball again. You can't have 3rd and 7. You know, you can't. That can't happen to your offense.
Derek's first carry against Dallas was in the second quarter.
You know what? You can pick out carries in this all year long.
Well, you're sitting there telling me that they give him the ball and then he doesn't do anything, so they can't give him the ball anymore.
Get the play-by of the first few games and go through them and look at it.
I'm giving you a game where he got 4.5 yards of carry and he only got 6 attempts. And his first attempt was only for 1 yard because it was a touchdown. And so then Derrick Henry on, 1st and 10, Derrick Henry up the middle for 4 yards. I think that's a pretty good carry. 1st and 10, 4 yard gain. I like that, right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, let's see the next Derrick Henry carry we got. Boy, Zeke got a lot of carries in this game. The next Derrick Henry carry, Derrick Henry left tackle for 13 yards on 1st and 10. Then on the next play, Derrick Henry left guard for 2 yards. And then that took us right into the fourth quarter. And then Derek got it again, right in for 6 yards. And that was Derek's day. No, Derek up the middle for 1 yard late in the game. And that's when Dallas started calling timeouts and it was over anyways. So he had a couple of 1 yarders in there. Now, one of them was a touchdown. So you can't get mad at a guy for getting 1 yard when he gets a touchdown because you can't get any more yards after you get a touchdown.
Right.
But, I mean, there's a 13 in here, there. There's a couple sixes in there, a four on a 1st and 10. Like, that's what he was, and they just didn't give him the ball. And now, you're right. At the beginning of the season, there was a lot of one, minus one. Now you're down 10-0, so you can't really run it with Derek anymore kind of things. But even there were a lot of times during the season last year in close games where they took him off the field. And I just think this year the mindset has to be that you don't do that.
Well, there were some game. Like, I want to say the New England game, the first part of that game wasn't – isn't that where Lewis went wild?
No, that was the Eagle game where Lewis went
wild. Okay, the Eagle game. Lewis goes wild. I mean, you know, it's the same thing. If I'm giving it to him and he's averaging about 6 or 7 yards a carry, I mean, I'm probably not going to look at a lot of running backs. You know, I'm going to be satisfied with that.
Well, Marcus was the one that went off in the New England game early. And when Marcus is going off in a game, you can't take the ball out of Marcus's hands. Derek in the New England game had 11 for 58 and 2 touchdowns. So even though he didn't, that's still 5-2-7 a pop. But when Marcus is throwing the ball the way Marcus was throwing it, I don't have any problem with him only getting 11 carries. Plus, he scored 2 touchdowns. But then, you know, it was 9 against Indianapolis. That game was out of reach. 8 against Houston. That game was out of reach. And then that's when he really got going was after that. So Lewis Riddick says Derek Henry can't. Not we'll see, which I agree with Floyd's take. If Floyd wants to be, let's see. Derek has not been a bell cow running back for a full season. So I understand the let's see approach. He's done it for 4 games.
Well, see, the other thing with me is you have to keep in mind. I mean, we had Gary Brown, who we talked about the other day, who's now the Dallas Cowboy running back coach, he gained like 1,100 yards in eight games. Eight games. I mean, he was averaging like 100 yards a game. Now, after that season, we said, okay, we're in good shape. This is the new guy. Never heard of him again.
Well, he was on the Cowboys running back.
Yeah, now he's coaching.
Let's take your calls. Lewis Riddick says Derrick Henry cannot be a bell cow running back. Do we agree? Do we think it's ridiculous? Let's discuss. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. And I think he can be. I understand Floyd's position of let's see. I think he can be, and I think he truly is a bell cow running back. 615-737-1025. And then a question for Floyd coming up next. How do all the additions at wide receiver, A.J. Brown and Adam Humphries and Delanie Walker's return, does that help or hurt Derek's ability to be a bell cow running back? We'll discuss that next. It's Jared and the GM live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. and Mount Juliet on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Tennessee has – they have the pieces in place. But the combination of Adam Humphries, Corey Davis, A.J. Brown – when you think of the difference between those three players right there, that's ideally how you want to build it. That's how you want to build your wide receiver core. AJ's a combination guy, big, strong, physical guy. Corey's more like a gazelle, a guy who belongs on the outside, who needs some space to work, who can produce explosive plays. Adam is a guy who works on the interior, at the E position, in the slot, who can work between the numbers. And if Delanie Walker is healthy, he's as good as there is as far as being a hybrid type of tight end. So you have the pieces. Now it's about, can you put it all together like as a conductor of an orchestra, the offensive coordinator with Arthur Smith going to be charged with? Can you put it all together? Can you keep these guys healthy? Can you keep Marcus on the same page here with these guys and start to reel off wins?
Lewis Riddick yesterday on Darren and Donick. Do you think the addition of all the guys, because I agree with Lewis Riddick. I mean, and we've talked about this. If everything hits offensively, this team could be electric. But the everything is so much. If Mariota stays healthy, if Arthur Smith is a good coordinator, if A.J. Brown is as good as everyone says A.J. Brown is, if Davis breaks out, if Humphries comes in and ignites the team from the slot, if Delanie Walker returns at tight end, if all those things happen, is that good for Derrick Henry or is that bad for Derrick Henry? Because we're discussing whether or not Derrick Henry can be a bell cow running back. Lewis Riddick says no. But I wonder if all these additions wouldn't easily help Derrick Henry, because you can't put nine in the box if all these guys are going to be legit pass-catching options.
Yeah, I mean, the more options you have on offense benefits everybody, everyone, because it gives you a chance as a quarterback or as a coordinator to do something when they line up to take away something they expect you to do. By that, I mean, they think you're going to run the ball. They put nine in the box. As soon as they put nine in the box, you play action pass and hit Delanie Walker for a 30-yard gain. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you could. It gives you the opportunity to do those things. If you don't have those kind of guys, or if you don't have weapons at all those spots, you can see what you should do. But if what you should do has a guy that's not a very good player, you don't want to do it. You know, you don't want to try to throw the ball to guys not going to catch it. So, you know, if all of those options hit and everybody's playing well and everybody's being productive, everyone will benefit. On the offense.
I wonder if this team is starting to mold into the old Titans from this standpoint. When the Titans were at their best, the best Titans team ever, in my opinion, was the 2000 season. And that was the first year I feel like the Titans ever had a number one wide receiver, and that was when Derek Mason, in the middle of the season, went from like fifth on the depth chart to number one wide receiver, solely based on necessity of injuries, and D. Mace never gave it up. But you had D. Mace, you had the long ball threat in Chris Sanders, Frank Wycheck was a Pro Bowl tight end, and Eddie George was the bell cow running back. And I wonder if this team, if they're going to have a similar thing. Now, Davis, again, I don't ever think Davis will be a true number one wide receiver. But maybe Humphries is the go-to guy for Mariota, and Davis is the Chris Sanders deep ball threat guy. And then you couple that with Derrick Henry and Mariota's ability to run kind of like McNair's. I feel like that may be the key to success for the Titans this year is to be like the 2000 Titans. Now, they didn't have the pass rushers on defense that the 2000 Titans had, but the offense, maybe it could be.
Well, I think the opportunity to have a number of options, a number of weapons, is definitely there. Now, does that mean it's going to work out? No, it doesn't. You know, does that mean Arthur's going to use them correctly? No, it doesn't. Does that mean everybody's going to stay healthy? No, it doesn't. But if you look at, I mean, I am confident that the young slot from Tampa Bay that I can never remember his name.
Adam Humphries.
Humphries will come in and be productive. He's proven in the league he's productive. So he should be okay. I think if Delaney is healthy, he will be a giant plus. You know, I still question, I still really worry about his health. I think Davis on the outside will be fine. I think he will give you another weapon, and I expect a big year from him. I think, you know, can Brown and somebody else fill that other slot, the other receiver spot? Yeah, maybe it can. And maybe even Humphries can fill the other receiver slot. He played outside too. Not as much as he played slot, but he has played outside. So, I mean, between those two, if they go three receivers, one of those guys is going to be outside, the other guy is going to be the slot, in my opinion. And so, you know, you end up with weapons across the board. You end up with the ability to look out at a defense and see that they have a linebacker on the slot, not caring who the slot is, because you know that whoever it is going to be good enough, and you throw them the ball. Let them get what they can get. You see them in a blitz, and now, you know, Davis is going to get an inside release and runs across the field at 100 miles an hour. They get the ball to him, and he turns it up. You know, I mean, all of those kinds of things, I think, are going to be weapons for Marcus and for this offense. So, I mean, I think they're all there. Now, the question is just the same question we've, you know, asked about the Predators all year long. Are those guys going to blossom? Are those guys going to step forward? Are they going to do all of the things that we expect and want them to do? And you know, I mean, we don't really have an answer right now.
If this was your offense and you were GM, how giddy would you be about the idea of what your offense would be compared with how much you naturally guard yourself against getting too excited?
I mean, I think I'd probably be excited because if you look at four areas here, four of the critical five areas all have guys that have done it. You have seen them. You've seen Davis do it. You've seen Humphries do it. You've seen Delaney do it. And you've seen Henry do it. Okay? Now, you got the other receiver spot that you're – but you have some good candidates. You've got Brown. You've got Humphries. You've got, you know, whichever one doesn't play slot will play out there, vice versa. So, you know, you've got guys now. Has Brown played in the league? No. Can you get excited about him? Yeah, maybe. You know, we'll wait and see. But at least Humphries has done it. And so, you know, you get excited about that. Now, you look at the offensive line, you think, you know, have the two tackles ever played really good football? Yeah. You know, has Safford played really good football? Yeah. You know, has the center? Yeah. And now what about the right guard? Ooh. Let's check.
So I have a theory behind Floyd. I think Floyd thinks the Titans are better than everybody else thinks they are. Like, everybody thinks the Titans, I mean, Peter King has them 25th. Everybody thinks the Titans are fourth in the AFC South and all of that stuff. I think Floyd thinks the Titans have a chance to be a pretty good football team. I also think he can see how it may go awry. So he doesn't want to get everybody excited by saying they're going to be really good this year, because everybody, you know, two people get hurt and now they're not really good anymore. And then everyone will be like, but Floyd Reese said that they were going to be really good. Whereas I don't really have to worry when I say they're going to be 12-4. I don't have to really worry about what that puts on John Robinson and Mike Vrabel. Whereas maybe for you to say it does put a little bit of that on.
Well, you don't want to, I mean, I don't want to have happened, you know, like what happened with the Preds again. I mean, the beginning of the year, this time last year, keeping the team together with the Preds. They all came
oh,
in.
Oh, we just got one they more game against got, Winnipeg.
They
oh,
got, we hey, we're going to be in great shape. Everybody was thrilled. Oh, man, we're on our way to the playoffs. We're on our way. This is we're going to be in the finals now. We've got this whole group back together, and they're all excited, and they want to be together, and they've got the coaches, and we got to, everybody's on the same page. Everything is good to go. Hello.
Imagine being the Boston Celtics.
I don't want to go back there. You know, I don't want to be that guy.
Imagine being the Celtics. You lost in Game 7 of the conference finals to LeBron James. LeBron James then leaves your conference. And you get Kyrie Irving back. Kyrie Irving didn't play in that. So LeBron James leaves the conference, opens it wide up, and you get maybe the second best player in the conference back on your team that went to Game 7 last year. Out in the second round, 4-1.
Well, yeah, I'm looking, I'm just messing around in there looking at, you know, that book. And one season, I can't remember which season it was, we were 11-5. We had the best record in the AFC. The next year, we were 12-4. And didn't even have the best record in our division.
Yeah, that was 2002 to 2003.
Then 2 years after that, we were 13-3. And there were three teams with a better record. That was, I think that was the year that New England went 16-0 and somebody won 14 or 15. And, you know, so that's how crazy it is. That's why it's hard when you say, well, you know, you should be able to do this with 10 wins or 11 wins. Or, yeah, maybe you can, maybe you can't. You just don't know.
Titans were 10-6 in 2007 and made it in as the sixth seed into the AFC playoffs. Last game of the year kind of thing. All right, let's get to your phone. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Huge news out of New York today in the NFL. We will get to that next on Jared and the GM. It's ESPN 102.5, The Game.
I'm a native New Yorker. I mean, this just cannot be happening. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. After what we had to deal with yesterday with Zion Williamson not landing in New York City, we learned that the Jets are going to be replacing their GM. And why is that, David Lloyd? Why is that exactly? Because Adam Gase, who has a 23-25 record in 3 years as the head coach of Miami, who missed the playoffs his last 2 years as a head coach, suddenly comes in and he gets to make decisions about who the GM is supposed to be? I mean, are you kidding me? You just can't make this up.
Stephen A. not happy about the Jets firing general manager Mike Maccagnan today and naming Adam Gase as general manager of the Jets. The only thing I can say when I saw that is only the Jets. Only the Jets would do that. Now, I don't know if Maccagnan's a good football guy or not. His record would say that he is not. But I met him at the Music City Bowl 1 year, and he seemed really, really nice. And my theory with most of these things are if you're nice to me, I have a little soft spot for you. So I have no idea how to evaluate Maccagnan. I'm okay with firing Maccagnan, but not now, and not to name Adam Gase GM. It's like I said to you today, how's Adam Gase supposed to – do you think Adam Gase, if a defensive tackle comes across the waiver wire, what does Adam Gase know about him?
Nothing.
He is the definition of these coaches that come in there to basically be a glorified coordinator to then farm out the other side of the ball to somebody else, and then he just runs his thing. He doesn't do – and he wasn't very good at it in Miami, and now he's GM on top of coach?
Yeah, I think that's – I mean, I don't think they're hiring him or giving him that title to and expect him to do it. I think they're just giving him that title to keep from giving it to somebody else, one of those other guys, mm-hmm. whoever the next guy in line would be. So I think they'll hold on to it until they officially hire somebody, and then, you know, that guy will get the title back. But, I mean, I don't – there's something wrong with the Jets. You know, there's something wrong in that environment. And I don't know exactly what it is, but, I mean, they've been through a series of GMs and a series of head coaches and a – series of quarterbacks and a series of whatever else you want to throw in there, and they cannot get it right. Cannot get it right. So whenever I see that happening, I always go higher. I always think it's higher than that. I mean, so I go to ownership, or I go, if there's a president, I go to the president, or I go to some, but somebody's messing that whole thing up. And they've got so much money that they don't care if they're messing it up or not.
Yeah, because they'll just throw money at it to, you know, fix it.
But
what they think
they'll never, they'll never get it right. And this is just a great example of it. Here you give a guy, you know, zillions of dollars to go out and sign the Le'Veon Bells of the world, and you trust him to sign a Le'Veon Bell and trust that he's vetted this guy and trust that he signed all those other unrestricted free agents and spent millions of dollars, then turn around and draft an entire draft class.
With the number three pick.
And then, yeah, with a top pick, and then turn around and fire him. We go, wait a minute now. You just trusted him with probably $50, $60, $100 million you trusted him with, and you don't even know if he's right, wrong, or indifferent, and you're firing him? No, there's a lot more to it than that.
So I have a couple conspiracy theories. Number one, I think that they had planned to fire Maccagnan for some time now. They thought there was a chance Zion Williamson, that the Knicks were going to get the number one pick, and if the Knicks got the number one pick, then the perfect time to fire your GM randomly would be the day after, right after the Knicks get the number one pick, because then everyone will be talking about the Knicks and no one will be talking about you. So I wonder if that was in the plans. And number two, you know who I think is going to be the next general manager of the Jets? And I don't, you know, Adam Schefter reported today that Daniel Jeremiah on NFL Network seems to be a leading candidate to be out there. I don't know if Daniel Jeremiah has worked in an executive role in the NFL ever. I don't think he has, but that...
Which means he's prime candidate.
I mean, he's on
TV. No clue. So.
I think they
can't get out of their own way.
I think that's the new thing now, is to hire people off of television.
Yeah, they just can't get out of their own way. They don't know. Here, the problem is, they don't know who to hire. They, meaning ownership, president, whoever's doing the hiring. They don't know who to hire. They don't necessarily want to go to the league. You know, they don't want the league to think that they don't know what's going on. So they'll either just pull somebody out of a hat, you know, watch them on TV and like them or whatever the case, whatever. You know, that's like when William Clay hired Matt Millen. And I like Matty Millen, but Matty was good doing TV. He was a horrible GM. But, you know, is he a big, well-spoken, good-looking guy? Yes, he is. Great guy. And so, you know, you for whatever reason, you fall in love with him, and he's the guy. I told you I had a buddy, GM buddy, that hired a head coach because he was good on TV. Now, the guy was fired in a year and a half, but, you know, I mean, he was good. That's the reason? Oh, you ought to see him on TV, man. He kills it.
Speaking of TV, you know who I think the Jets are going to hire to be their GM?
Yeah, he said...
They're talking about Daniel Jeremiah. I don't think they're going to hire him.
Oh.
I think the city of New York would revolt if they hired Daniel Jeremiah to be coach. But I think it's going to be the guy that offered up this gym a couple of weeks ago.
And I'm going to throw one other dynamic into this AFC South discussion. Ryan Tannehill, by week six or sooner, will be the starting quarterback of the Tennessee Titans, because when healthy, he's the better quarterback than Marcus Mariota.
Well, and you said by what? I'm sorry, Mike, week seven?
By week six or sooner.
Mike's Miami days blew us away here with his good prediction.
That's a great prediction.
Okay, I think Mike Tannenbaum, because the owner...
He's already been there.
Yes, the owner right now is Christopher Johnson. Woody Johnson used to own the team, but now I think Woody Johnson is like working for Trump as some ambassador of something or whatever. So Christopher Johnson's running the team. Who's the coach? Who did the coach used to work for? This owner doesn't know who to hire, so he'll just go hire a guy he knows, Tannenbaum. They'll bring Tannenbaum in, and because he and Gase will get along, they'll be like, hey, they're buddies. They work together in Miami. And Tannenbaum will be back with the Jets. And the Jets will continue to stink for forever. I am telling you. Mark that down. Mark that down. I'm the first person in the media to say Tannenbaum's going back to the Jets. I have no sourcing on this. It's my gut of stupidity surrounding the Jets that makes me think this. So mark the tape so that when it happens, people will say, Jared Stillman saw this coming a mile away. Because, Floyd, the Jets are that stupid.
I mean, if they're that stupid, they deserve whatever they get. They deserve to not win any games.
You know what? This is the New England Patriots have to worry about one thing, one person over the next, I don't know, 10 years. And the one person they have to worry about is Tua Tagovailoa. Because if Tua's good, then he goes to the Dolphins next year, then maybe there's a chance that they'll eventually have some competition in that division. But if Tua doesn't go there, then the Patriots, even without Brady, whenever he decides to hang it up, the Patriots will go win division titles for 25 years straight because these other three teams are so stupid.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's it's. I mean, New England is doing everything right. Don't get me wrong. Not everything right, but doing a lot of things right. Don't get me wrong. But of equal import is that especially the Jets do everything wrong.
Everything.
I mean, it literally everything they touch turns to crap. And we talked about this before. I mean, you can't be one of those places where everything that happens gets worse. And that's what the Jets are.
Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver, going to join us next. His thoughts on all the Lewis Riddick comments and the thoughts about Mariota. And we will get to that with Chris Sanders coming up next. It's Jared and the GM right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Play the Game Nationals NHL playoff pick'em for your chance to win some great prizes. Go to thegamenational.com for more details. Sign up and enter your chance before the puck drops for each game of each round. This is a daily contest. So you have to make your picks prior to each game. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Jared and the GM, the big NFL news. The Jets have fired their general manager. How are they going to sign guys for training camp and stuff like that with no general manager at this point in the year?
Well, I'm sure they've got somebody that's director of pro personnel, director of college personnel or something that will have to take that over. You're at a point where it's not all that big a deal. You know, it's not the end of the world if you end up only signing 10 undrafted college players instead of 14 or something. You know, it's not a big deal.
Don't want to miss anybody. Former Titans receiver Chris Sanders joins us, presented by Craneworks. They've been serving the Southeast for over 25 years. Craneworks.com. So, Chris, the midday show had Lewis Riddick from ESPN on. And okay. Lewis Riddick was asked about where the Titans factor in the AFC South. This is what Lewis had to say.
Indianapolis is getting a lot of run. I mean, and Chris Ballard is doing a lot of good things, and obviously you have to believe in Andrew Luck and how that offensive line, how that team is being constructed. Houston's going to be in it because the quarterback is spectacular, but they need to protect him. Jacksonville's going to be strong. How does Nick Foles adapt to this offense? They're right there. I think that division is up for grabs. You'd have to give Indianapolis the nod right now, but Tennessee is right in there with Jacksonville. They're right in there with Houston. They're right in it. They just have to get, as we talked about earlier, they have to get these guys all on the same page, and they have to keep this quarterback healthy, and they better be able to rush the pass. As simple as, and we'll see. But they have a chance. Just like I think that division's wide open.
Chris, do you agree with Lewis Riddick, or how do you see the AFC South?
Oh, man, I mean, I think he hit it right on the head. I mean, every team has gotten better, especially with the Tennessee Titans. I mean, with the offensive guys that they got, and the defense is going to get strong with Jeffrey Simmons. But the one team that really scares me, and I hate to say this, I can't believe it's even coming out of my mouth, is the Jacksonville Jaguars. And the reason why I say the Jacksonville Jaguars is because last year, if you look at what they did, the reason why they struggle sometimes is because of quarterback play. Their defense kept them in the game, but their quarterback play, Bortles, was terrible. But now you got a guy, he may not be really, 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 really good, but he's not going to make mistakes like Bortles. So I just think that the Jacksonville Jaguars scare me. I know we're talking about the Indianapolis Colts. They got Luck and all those guys. But I just think the one team that scares me is Jacksonville Jaguars because they have no pressure going. And last year they had pressure, you know, to go on to perform because everybody was expecting them to win the AFC South. Now they're just sitting in the cup because everybody's talking about the Titans, everybody's talking about the Colts, and everybody's talking about Houston, and nobody's talking about the Jags. That's a scary team.
So I have a theory, though, and I want to run this by you about Jacksonville. Sure. I think that the Jags' biggest problem is twofold. One, I don't think their coach has a strong enough personality to kind of contain the attitudes that they have, and I think they've got to get rid of Jalen Ramsey. I think Jalen Ramsey hurts your football team, and he is a distraction. And, I mean, even making noise by saying, I'm not coming to voluntary workouts. What do you think about that aspect of the Jags that hasn't changed, even though they changed the quarterback?
That's the reason why they're not going to win. I mean, we always talk about what does a professional look like. And a professional comes to work. If the coach asks you to come volunteer, you're there every single day. I just think Jalen Ramsey needs somebody in his life to really tell him, man, you got to be a professional and show up and be there to be a leader. Everybody wants to be a leader. Everybody wants to be the guy. Being the guy has just not been on Sunday. And I just think that and I agree with you, Jared, if the Jaguars are going to win, I think that Jalen Ramsey is going to have to change his attitude, or he's going to have to get traded, because if they get rid of him, they still got a lot of talent at corner. They still got, you know, some beasts at the defensive line, and then they got an offensive line, and they got a quarterback. So I just think if they get rid of all the personalities and come together as a team, that's a dangerous team that kind of scares me.
Chris Lewis also came out in strong support of Corey Davis. I mean, he really likes Corey. Thinks he's got a chance to be, you know, one of the premier receivers. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
You got to get me in trouble, ain't you?
Yeah.
I think he can. You know, last year he had some signs, some flashes of doing great. He had some flashes of some good games. But I just think the thing for him is he's got to be consistent. He's got to be one of those guys that takes over a game, like a Julio Jones, a guy like that. When he gets the ball in his hands, you just hold your breath. You know, we had that a little bit. We had it with the Eagles, and we had it in some games. But he's got to be a guy that just takes over the game. And you want one of those guys that you feel on the field. When you look at Julio Jones, when he catches the ball, you feel that guy on the field. If Corey Davis can take it to that kind of level, to where you feel him and he takes over a game, I agree with that guy. I think Corey Davis can be an outstanding player in this league.
How do you feel about when you put, you know, let's say you put Corey on the outside and you put whoever you want on the other side, and then you take the other guy and put him in the slot, and then you've got Delaney, and then you've got Derek, and then you've
got... Come on, Floyd, you get me excited,
yeah,
man.
I mean, what do you think of that when you start talking about all those guys?
Scary. I mean, you got a team that's full of potential, and I hate to say that word. Potential sounds good, but it's a bad word. You have all these guys. You have Humphrey. You have Davis. I mean, you have A.J. Brown. You have... You can go Ferkser in there. You got Henry. You got all these talents. It sounds good, but it's all going to depend on what the quarterback play is. I mean, you can have all the talent in the world. You can have the greatest receivers in the world. You can have the greatest backs in the world. You can have the greatest line in the world. But if your quarterback is not consistent every single week, then that's the problem that's going to hurt the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah. Former Titans receiver Chris Sanders is with us, presented by Crane Works. Then I'll put it to you on the quarterback. Are you a believer in the quarterback? How would you feel if you were a receiver and he was your quarterback with the rest of this offense?
You know what? Steve Mack was in this position before, and I believed in him from day one. I knew he had the talent. I knew he had the guts to do anything. I mean, he's probably one of the toughest players, and I just think as a receiver, you have to believe in your quarterback. You know, I just looking at Mariota, I think those guys believe in him, and that locker room, I believe in Mariota. I want Mariota to succeed so bad because he represents the NFL so good. But at the end of the day, teams don't care about that if you represent the team, because they want to see wins. And I just think that if he comes out and plays consistent and stays healthy, man, he can dominate the game. I mean, look at what he did against the Eagles. I mean, he converted 3 or 4 fourth downs. That's the kind of player he is. But the key word that keeps standing in his way is, number one, he's consistently hurt. Number two, he's got to be consistent each and every game. And if he can do that and stay consistent and stay healthy, woo, let's go Tennessee Titans. Let's tighten up, baby.
Is it harder for you to get behind him in terms of saying, hey, I believe hand down on the table because of the injuries? Or is it because you're not in that facility every day, you're not on that team, and you don't have that kind of relationship with him?
That's a good question. I mean, I know everybody talks about his injuries, and I know we as fans, we don't see what goes on in the locker room. But if he wins the faith of his teammates and he wins the faith of his coaches, I just think it can really, really work out. I mean, I'm a believer. I mean, I watch him. This guy's a competitor. Everybody kind of talks about he's not a leader because he's going to scream and shout and cuss people out and grab people by the face. Man, Steve McNair didn't do that, but he won. And I just think that if he just stays consistent and stays healthy, man, I'm telling you, he can turn his whole career around, and he can do some good things. And another thing that I want to point out, if you look at Steve McNair, and I know I'm going back to him, but he needs that. Steve McNair had a signature game. It was in 1999 when we played, I think it was the Pittsburgh Steelers, when he was sitting out and he came in and he led our team to victory. And I really believe that changed his career. I think if Mariota has one of those signature games where they're down by a whole bunch and he comes back to win and he shows that guttiness and that heart, I think that can turn his career absolutely around.
You know the only reason why Chris picks that game? He made the big third down catch. The only reason you picked that game is because you had an incredible third down catch to late in the game to help win that one. We know what you're doing. Aaron Kinney caught a game-winning touchdown pass in that game. Yeah. I'm sure Aaron feels the same way about that game that you do. Chris Sanders, as always, is presented by CraneWorks.
Hey, thank you, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
Chris Sanders, OTAs next week. We'll have Chris on to break down everything with OTAs. But you know that's the only reason Chris picked that game.
He's a smart guy.
I know it was 19 years ago. That was a heck of a catch by Chris Sanders.
It was third and 11 or third and 9 or something.
I think it was like third and 11 or third and 16 or something like that.
Yeah, it was third and long.
And just jumped up out of nowhere.
Skied.
Unbelievable catch. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. I want to pick up on the Tennessee discussion we had yesterday about the Vols, because it hit me yesterday what I think we need from Jeremy Pruitt. Now, it may not be this year, but I think we need to see it, and we'll get to that next on Jared and the GM. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.